Welcome to Native America Calling from Isleta Pueblo in New Mexico. I'm Tara Gatewood. Tribal elections are bringing new voices along with some familiar faces to the circle of leadership in our Native nations. It's a chance for tribal citizens to weigh in on the direction of their government. Every nation sets its own method for conducting fair and equitable elections. Coming up, we'll hear some highlights on the 2020 tribal elections and what it takes to keep the trust of Native voters. We'll kick things off right after National Native News. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A text messaging campaign has rolled out that aims to promote sexual wellness for Indigenous youth across the Pacific Northwest. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
Called Talking is Power, the goal is to get parents, guardians, and trusted community role models to sign up for texts that'll provide resources for having important conversations with their kids and other youth. Topics include consent, protection, HIV and STDs, and intimate partner violence. Michelle Singers with the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board, one of the partners behind the text campaign.
The effect and the reach of text messages can reach far and wide, and that's why text messaging is so popular in a lot of our Native communities.
Singer says so far, nearly 200 parents have signed up for the weekly text messages. Federal data shows American Indians and Alaska Natives have a higher risk of sexually transmitted infections and HIV than other groups. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
2020 was challenging in pushing Native voter turnout in North Dakota. Because of the pandemic, the state didn't see as much activity in tribal communities. North Dakota Native Vote says connections were still made. The group wanted to build on the higher turnout among Native populations the state saw in 2018. But early estimates indicate the number will be lower. Nicole Donaghy, executive director, says momentum's not lost.
We've made those connections and we were reinforcing our brand, getting, you know, North Dakota Native Vote out there again. And so people are certainly familiar with us, and that can only help.
Amid the election's final stages, COVID-19 cases were spiking in North Dakota. The group hosted virtual trainings, while the Sacred Pipe Resource Center deployed field staff for door-to-door canvassing when conditions allowed. For future elections, Executive Director Cheryl Carey says a goal is to raise more awareness about IDs.
You do have a very mobile population, so it's not uncommon for someone to have 2, 3, 4 addresses a year. And so trying to keep up and getting information out there that people, you know, where they can get their IDs and how they can update them and things like that.
The coalition would like to see more Native people work at polling places to help Indigenous voters. Tribal health programs and urban Indian health organizations will decide how to access the COVID-19 vaccine, according to the Indian Health Service. They have the option of receiving the vaccine from either the IHS or states. According to the IHS, once vaccines are available, they'll be allocated to IHS to distribute to tribal programs and urban centers. Federal health officials say tribal nations have been a key part of planning the vaccine rollout. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the IHS, and tribes are working on distribution for federal sites. The IHS provides services to more than 2 million American Indian and Alaska Native people across the country. As of late November, the IHS COVID-19 vaccine distribution list includes 337 places that will receive a COVID-19 vaccine from the agency when it becomes available. Television producers of ABC's Big Sky are addressing criticism from Indigenous groups. The Associated Press reports the drama set in Montana follows the disappearance of 2 non-Native women. Indigenous groups, including Montana tribal leaders, sent a letter to producers in November saying the show overlooks the real issue impacting Indigenous women. According to the Associated Press, the statement from producers said their eyes have been opened after conversations with the Indigenous community, adding they're working to bring attention to the issue. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Board promotes Indian artists of federally recognized tribes through its online source directory. Information on this no-charge opportunity available at doi.gov/IACB, who support this program.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shirwiptui via Skype. The presidential election is over and court cases challenging the results are ongoing. Many tribal nations have also completed their elections, and several tribes ushered in new leadership as well as set new directions for their government. The process of deciding leaders is not a new concept for tribes. But before First Contact, tribes had their own ways of choosing their decision makers. Now, mainly federally recognized tribes have constitutions that require regular elections to decide who's in charge. Coming up, we'll hear about different ways tribes hold elections. And we'd like to hear from you as well. How did things turn out for your tribal nation? Did your tribal election turn up a set of new leaders? What's your outlook on how things will progress with your new leadership? Phone lines are open. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. Also, win or lose, if you put your name in the running, we want to hear from you too. Dial in now. The number to join us is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us today from Pine Ridge, South Dakota, is Henny Whalen, and she was a candidate for Oglala Sioux Tribe Vice President, and she is Oglala Sioux. Our pleasure to have her here. Henny, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you.
And so, Henny, it's interesting. We have definitely been watching a lot with the national race, presidential election. But there are tribal elections that some are just as heated as what we're seeing in the mainstream. And there's a lot that goes with it, too, especially leading up generations of families and thinking about the future. And so, Henny, tell me your story. Why did you want to run for vice president of your tribal nation?
I have ran a couple of times for vice president because I feel that there's a need to bring economic development here on the reservation. And there's a team of us that want to create economic development and bring homes here. And we figured out a way how to do it. But I could never seem to get in as vice president. And I'm going to go straight into election code. Our election code has changed every 2 years. And they're minor changes, but it seems like they're changes made from me filing in court. So I'm going to give you an example, like, 1 year, the police officers are supposed to deliver the ballots throughout the districts. We have 9 districts here on our reservation. So the police officers were willing to testify that they wasn't called to bring the ballot into the election commission office. So they was going to testify in court. It got dismissed. So for this election, they changed it that the police officers will deliver ballots upon availability of the police officers. And, you know, in your previous introduction, they talked about IDs. Okay, so throughout the United States, you know, natives were, you know, against the ID law, and they went to court cases. Okay, so in our particular case, I also challenged the ID law here that our tribal government was imposing on us. We have a district out that's the furthest from the centrally located Pine Ridge, and that's where the ID machine is in the enrollment office, and it cannot be moved. It's stagnant. So So a person from Wombly has to drive in 100 miles, possibly pay somebody to bring them into Pine Ridge to get a $20 ID, then go back home. So, you know, that's voter suppression, having an ID. And I also took that before, you know, in a court case. And so basically all that the election commission's attorney has to do is say, denied, denied, denied. So the next step is go to Supreme Court. Supreme Court denies everything also, even though I had witnesses. I was never given a fair hearing, you know, with the Supreme Court, Oglala Sioux Tribal Supreme Court, you know, to present all the evidence. They just, you know, dismissed my case. And so basically, you know, we have a very low voter turnout, anywhere between 2,000 to 3,000 people, when we're supposed to have at least 40,000 people on our reservation. And I want to point out one more thing. We use this ordinance called 9916, and it basically defines who can run and who cannot run. So the offense shall mean a conviction of a violation of the Oglala Sioux Tribal Criminal Code, federal law, or state law. So I knew that there were some candidates that had tribal charges on them, and I filed. It got dismissed again in Supreme Court. So to modify the election ordinance, they took that part off, and they only go with the offenses involving dishonesty act shall include, and it gives about 16 things that you can't commit. So basically, it's okay now that if you're convicted of a Oglala Sioux Tribal Criminal Code law, you know, you can run. Federal law, you could run. Or state law, you can run. And then we have a strict policy in there. You know, you have to be a resident of our tribe for 1 year. So I've known candidates that actually come up here from other places where they live at, right before we take out petitions, and they were candidates, and they made it into council. And so that itself, you know, is a dishonest act. Why are you still sitting in council?
And that's a lot. And just walking through a lot of, you know, these different layers. And for you, Henny, it seems that a challenge to some of these things is kind of seems your only option. And for you, Henny, bringing this kind of attention to leadership, what kind of response have you gotten as well? I know you've gone through the courts, but, you know, do you feel that people are willing to listen and make change?
I'm hoping they're willing to listen. You know, I blog on the elections quite a bit on Facebook, and, you know, to tell them exactly what's happening with our elections. You know, I would like the voters to get more involved and, you know, start voting. And like I say, we probably only have 2,000 to 3,000 people that vote. And you know, if voters would start voting, they could bring a change in leadership throughout our reservation.
And so taking a look at how things went this year, Henny, what are your thoughts about, you know, just elections and, you know, how much more they need to reform?
Well, in the election ordinance, there's probably about 5 different laws pertaining to drugs. We have to take a hair follicle test, which is costly. We have to pay for the state background checks, federal background checks, tribal background checks. So in the ordinance, like I say, there's 5 of them that pertain to drugs. And the one that I went by was the hair follicle place, or the clinical lab, is to deliver, hand deliver our drug result to the election commission. So when I handed in my packet, they wouldn't accept it because they said that I needed receipt. Okay, so that's nowhere in the election ordinance for us to hand in receipts. So I was disqualified. And so basically I took it to Supreme Court. And like I say, every election, we have a new election ordinance. So the Supreme Court ruled off of 2 years ago election ordinance. And so, you know, I fired back on a motion of reconsideration. And, you know, my words wasn't very kind because these are Supreme Court justices and they should have the proper election ordinance right in front of them. And the attorney for the Election Commission never gave an argument except for saying that the hand-in receipt is custom and practice. So these Supreme Court judges made an argument for the Election Commission, I should say for their lawyer, and, you know, which is unbecoming because the Supreme Court is supposed to weigh evidence and make a decision from the evidence and the law. And so, you know, I was denied on that process, and I filed another complaint. Our elections was supposed to start 180 days, so our election was possibly to start around June 8th. Our election period started around August 4th, and it's ending December 4th. So we was cut short as candidates and as voters to weigh in on candidates, you know, to be selected, to ask questions and whatnot. We was cut short. So basically the Supreme Court denied me again, even though there was violations in the election ordinance. And so my next step was to go to the executive board. You know, that's the treasurer, the secretary, the president, vice president of the tribe. Okay, so those guys are candidates too, and they didn't want to hear it because they thought that it would hamper their vote if they had a new election. And so I went before the Law and Order Committee, and at one point in time, they decided to bring it up on council, but that never happened. So I'm exercising my right on taking this to federal court. Because, you know, there's voter suppression here. Our rights as candidates have been violated because, you know, there's lawlessness in the election code that nobody seems to be abiding by. There's still people that living outside the reservation that are candidates or that doesn't live within their own districts that are candidates. And I think it's,
you know,
okay.
Henny, I do want to pick up on, you know, your thoughts too, also on bringing federal court in, but we got to go to break here. So hold your thought. And if you want to join us too, our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. We are talking with Henny Whalen out of the Ogola Sioux Nation. And I know that there was a lot of people watching this election for different reasons. If you have any thoughts, we want to know, how did tribal elections go in your nation? Call in now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Join us, and you can even share maybe how things have changed since the last election. We're ready for your calls. We're ready for your comments. Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Phone lines are open.
The Trump administration is taking gray wolves off the endangered species list, citing adequate recovery of wolf populations. This decision means states and tribes have more responsibility for managing wolves. Conservationists say the action comes too soon. We'll hear about delisting gray wolves on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mesota Pueblo, and we are talking about tribal elections today. When your tribe holds elections, is it a time for celebration? Or right now, is it another source of conflict? Do you have a democratic process for electing tribal leaders? The number to join us and share your thoughts is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today on the program, out of Pine Ridge, South Dakota, is Henny Whalen. She was a candidate for Oglala Sioux Tribe Vice President. She joins us today. And before I bring her back in, do want to let you know we did reach out to the Oglala Sioux Tribal Election Commissioners and invited them to be on the program today. We did not hear back from them by the start of our show, but our phone lines are open and anybody can join us if you're listening now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Henny, go ahead and finish your thought.
Well, I want to nationally, they have a voter's registration list. You know, people apply to vote. They intend to vote. So here, we don't have that. We should, all reservations should have this. But they should go out there and get a voter's registration drive for our elections. And there's two reasons why. Because one time, they didn't have a voter's, they didn't know how many ballots to send out in the districts. And so a lot of the districts ran short of ballots. And that was also included in my complaint. So they didn't award a new election then either. And so basically, this also ties into the Constitution because, like I said, you know, we have about 40,000 members here. And without a voter's registration list, if we wanted to change the Constitution, we have to get one-third of 40,000 signatures to change the Constitution. We as the people could do that, or the tribal government could do that. So basically, if we had a voter's registration drive, and if there is only 2,000 people that want to vote, then the people that want to change the Constitution, they only have to get a third of the 2,000 registered voters. So it's kind of big, and I see why we need a voter's registration drive here. And, you know, some girls before, I call them the constitutional girls, they kind of didn't really realize that, what they was getting themselves into. So they went out and got one-third of the signatures of 40,000 people, and, you know, to change the Constitution. But yet they fell short on some of the signatures and whatnot. So the Constitution didn't get changed.
So it sounds like, you know, reform is what I'm hearing from you, that there needs to be reform on different levels. And I want to turn this to our listening audience, too, because a lot of times, you know, what you hear on this program sounds like exactly what's happening in your own tribal nation, or maybe even just the opposite. And definitely want our listeners to know that each tribal nation is unique, how they run elections, how they vote in their new leadership. And so we'd like you to also add to this, too, to share a perspective on how all of these things happen. Does your tribe need reform when it comes to elections? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Henny, we got a caller on the line. We're going to say hi to Melvin, who is in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Melvin, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Yeah, in this recent election, I had to go to the village to vote in the tribal election, and then I had to go to Southern Nebraska to vote in the presidential race. And I just wish it would be easier where the tribes where we could go to one spot and vote instead of, it gets discouraging to try to catch a ride here and then, you know, vote here, then catch a ride to another town to vote. And the tribes need to make it easier for not only us to vote in all elections, but, you know, to be able to vote, period. A lot of times make it difficult for members to vote.
I hear you, Melvin. And, you know, when we see these observations, who exactly is it that hears some of these things? And what kind of things are changing because people are speaking up? Wondering about that, too? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Melvin, great to hear your voice. And Henny, to pick it back up, talking about wanting to take things to federal court. Tell me a little bit about that. Any concerns about bringing federal court into your tribe's elections? Is this eroding sovereignty?
It's not eroding sovereignty. It's what it's doing is strengthening our tribal members' rights to a fair and honest election. And I already submitted the brief to the court, and I'm waiting for the responses from the lawyers. And we have a thing down here called, you know, our tribe is sovereign immunity from its own members, like the program that they have, is they claim sovereign immunity. So if a program basically violates a person's right and we take it to tribal court, they will it will get dismissed in tribal court by the tribe's attorney because of their sovereign clause. We take it to the Supreme Court, it will also get dismissed because of the sovereign clause. And so basically that sovereign clause is eroding our rights, our civil rights, our Bill of Rights, our, you know, that we should have as being members of the tribe. If I wasn't a member of the tribe and I lived offside the reservation, I would enjoy those rights under the United States Constitution. So I don't see why our tribal government has to restrict us, because we are set here through treaties, and those treaties was carefully thought out about, you know, from our leaders back then. We have a huge land base, but that's eroded. And so I think for us all to get along as tribal members, we need to have our rights. And so I'm wondering how far their sovereign cause can go in federal court also. Is federal court going to uphold the sovereignty of the tribe? Well, I'm a member, and I should also have my sovereign rights.
Thank you. Henny Whalen here with us out of Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Your thoughts on what you're hearing so far, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Henny, I'm also going to bring in another voice. Joining us today out of Seattle, Washington, is Gabe Galanda. He is a managing lawyer at Galanda Broadman, and he is from the Round Valley Indian Tribe. Gabe, thanks for joining us today. Welcome.
Good morning, Tara.
And Gabe, from what you're hearing from Henny, what are some of the things you'd like to pick up on or just hearing her case?
Well, I hear a lot of sentiments that echo experiences I've had out here in the Northwest representing individuals who sought to run for office but were disallowed candidacy, individuals who voted in an election that was corrupted by tribal leaders. But I've also counseled election boards and tribes in ensuring that elections are open and honest. And Tara, the bottom line for me is a tribal election may only be fair and honest if its current tribal leaders are fair and honest. And if current tribal leadership, including incumbent candidates, lack integrity, there is a chance, if not a likelihood, that the election will lack integrity. And that's because tribal elections fall within the authority of the tribal council or the business committee, whoever the governing body of the tribe is under IRA constitutions, most commonly, as you alluded earlier. And that means that whoever's overseeing the election, an election superintendent or an election committee or an election board, is subordinate to that set of tribal leaders, including incumbent candidates. Those leaders and those incumbents appoint the board. They oversee the board. They can hire, fire, or displace the board or the superintendent. And that's not completely unique to tribes. Of course, we see with the United States and the president's firing of the election security official that in the federal system, election oversight is also subordinate to the executive body, and in that case, the president of the United States. But the challenge is that subordinate election body, be it the election committee, board, or superintendent, they decide who can vote or not. They decide who can run for office or not. They handle appeals and decide whether an appeal can be heard, and they ultimately, in all likelihood, decide on an appeal. And that can all be subject to the will of the tribal council and, again, the incumbent members of that council who are seeking office, which poses significant challenges to tribal electorates and to elections.
In hearing from Henny, thinking, okay, my next option is go to federal court, what are your thoughts on that? What does that open up?
Well, that's challenging. We're in federal court right now, meaning the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, having sued the United States Department of Interior and the Trump administration for its improper influence of a tribal election at Nooksack. But we're there under the Federal Administrative Procedures Act, again, with the United States as a defendant, having waived its sovereign immunity. And as our Lakota relative has alluded, sovereign immunity is a challenge, meaning the tribal incumbents or tribal council or election officers who may have prevented a free, open, honest, and fair election may enjoy sovereign immunity, including in federal court. So jurisdiction is difficult to establish, including in federal court, when elections don't go the way they should, meaning they don't an open and honest way.
And so tell me a little bit more about what is going on with the Nooksack tribe and the elections. What kind of update can you give us on that?
Yeah, we're challenging a December 2017 special election for four seats on the Nooksack Tribal Council, which the four incumbents refused to vacate. And we saw that holdover council, as it was called, essentially then appoint the superintendent and election board. And the superintendent just happened to be the twin sister of a holdover council person and an incumbent candidate. And in the end, the holdover tribal council was reelected because they conspired with the twin sister, who was the superintendent, to corrupt the election. The BIA actually told the tribe, remove the twin sister from the election because she creates an appearance of unfairness to voters, and they feared there would be fraud. And that's exactly what happened. The code at Nooksack says, like here in Washington State, the election is to be conducted, quote-unquote, entirely by mail, with a limited exception of replacement ballots that could be received and cast in person within a short period of time before the election in the event somebody's ballot was lost or destroyed. Well, the superintendent and the election board, working with the holdover council, changed the rules mid-election to say that they will accept any ballot they, quote-unquote, receive, not any ballot that's, quote-unquote, postmarked or verified by signature, meaning that replacement ballots could then basically be cast at will. And they had access to a list of registered voters. They had access to a list of those who voted. And ultimately, ballots were cast for dead relatives, for homeless and addictive relatives who simply could not vote, and for others who did not or could not vote for themselves. So they stuffed the ballot box, and then they counted the ballots in private for the first time in the tribe's history, and they stole the election. And ultimately, the United States, meaning the Department of Interior and the BIA, despite saying remove the superintendent, that was during the early Trump administration with some Obama administration holdovers. By the time the Trump administration took office, there was obviously a change in attitude towards Indian policy and a change in ethics and morals. And the Interior Department ultimately looked away from the fraud and blessed the election. So I've actually had to laugh a little bit at the tribal or the United States president's claims of mail-in voting fraud this entire election, because I've actually seen it. So I think he's deranged, but I have seen firsthand how mail-in elections can be corrupted, and I've seen that in Indian country.
And so immediately, what needs to change?
Well, we need to continue to allow our tribal governments to mature in a good way. I mean, these are, by and large, a creature of constitutions that were foisted upon tribal societies in the 1930s. So we don't even have a century of experience with these constitutions. We have more recent experience with elections, at least to the degree that we now appreciate elections. So it's a question of maturation and perhaps constitutional reevaluation or reform. It's a question of ensuring ethics throughout a tribe and tribal government, meaning you shouldn't be elected to a tribal council unless you have a certain proven ethic and moral and honesty, because when your day comes to then become an incumbent candidate, that's when that honesty and integrity is tested, and we are seeing tribal governments fall victim to a lack of honesty and a lack of integrity and ethics, because the people who were once elected to office and now need to run for their office as an incumbent don't want to let go, and they will go to great lengths to not allow that happen, including suppressing the right of the people to elect their leaders, if not committing election fraud.
And Gabe, how does the story change, or does it, if it's a smaller tribe?
Well, that's the real challenge. If it's a smaller tribe, inherently everybody is closely related. Even in a large tribe, we're all related. So it's difficult in that you can't necessarily get away from some relation. Now, maybe it's not blood relation, but that's ideal. But even those who are non-related in terms of, you know, biology are still related, as we all know. So in a small tribe, that's a challenge. You could have a close relative or a sister or brother, aunt or uncle serve on an election board And that may have to happen, even though there's a niece or a nephew or a brother or sister running for office. But there still has to be integrity. There has to be independence. There has to be morals and ethics. That has to be woven into a constitution, woven into an election code. There has to be checks and balances. Some tribes are using outside companies to actually handle the vote counts, which is one way to do that in the event there's, you know, essentially nepotism or close kinship. There are ways to do this, but fundamentally, there has to be a will from the tribe and its people and its leadership to do it openly and honestly. And if there's not, you can see situations like are happening at Nooksack happen, you know, anywhere in the other 573 tribes.
And, you know, that is a lot of places where things could be happening. And again, you know, got to stress that each nation is different, and how they go about this is up to the nation themselves. And so that creates a lot of stories. I know that you have some thoughts on all this. Go ahead and dial in. We are talking about tribal elections today here on Native America Calling. And after hearing what is going on in two nations, you know, what are you thinking about? Has it made you want to rethink how things went? Did you know that there were even avenues to challenging if you see the system isn't working right? Are people's ears open when you do challenge? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And maybe you have a different take. Maybe there has been reform, and this year was the first year that you saw the most honest and open election in your tribe. Tell us about it. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we know there are many people who are involved in all this, so there's many stories we're ready to hear. Phone lines are open. Go ahead, dial in.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working with tribal communities across the nation to address the opioid crisis. Breaking the cycle starts with preventing opioid misuse, treating opioid use disorder with medications and counseling, and recovery support during all phases of recovery. If you or a loved one is challenged by opioid use disorder, you can find additional information at aaip.org.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and our topic today is tribal elections. Did your tribe recently have one? And maybe you have some thoughts about how things went. And of course, if you ran, put your name in the hat. Tell us about it, how things went. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Before the break, I introduced you to Gabe Galanda, who joins us today out of Seattle, Washington. He's a managing lawyer at Galanda Broadman, and from the Round Valley Indian Tribe. Gabe, thank you for being with us. And is there anything that you'd like to explain when it comes to tribal elections, of maybe how they're unique or how they also parallel what people see and participate in mainstream society?
Well, what I'd like to just do is observe that the stakes in tribal elections have gotten significantly higher given the advent of Indian gaming and other economic development. And before there was $36 or $35 billion swirling around Indian country on an annual basis, you know, the interest in elections may not have been as high, which isn't to say there wasn't interest in voting good leaders into office. That has always been the case for as long as these constitutions have existed and these elections have occurred. But there's now more interest in running for office, being elected to office, receiving a salary in elected office and fringe benefits, controlling tribal assets, controlling tribal monies, controlling tribal decision making. And that I see as a very troubling influence in our elections, in that there is now financial motivation rather than sort of moral or ethical motivation to run for tribal leadership. And of more concern, there's financial motivation to remain in tribal leadership, sometimes at any cost. At Nooksack, we saw the incumbents incinerate the entire tribe. Every institution of the Nooksack democracy was incinerated in order to maintain their seats in office, including their election institution. So the thing we need to be very mindful of is the influence that money and greed and graft are now having on our elections. and tribes need to put safeguards in place immediately to prevent essentially elections from becoming bought and sold. That is a very perilous dynamic for us all.
Thanks, Gabe. And again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. What about your own nation? Does your tribal constitution mandate you to hold an election for leadership? How did your tribe traditionally choose their leaders, and how do the two compare? The number to join is 1-800-996-2848. And Gabe, are there any things that just witnessing elections across Native nations where they do it really good or they do it right? Definitely don't want to just paint the picture. There's just nothing but corruption. Any positive sides to this?
Yeah, and by and large, I'm talking about the exception to the rule when we talk about these stories of elections gone bad. The vast majority of Indigenous nations, to my knowledge, are conducting elections with integrity. And there are laws in place to allow good candidates to qualify for candidacy and to run for office and perhaps be elected for office. There are laws in place to allow every eligible tribal voter to cast his or her ballot and express his or her will in terms of the future of their people. And there are institutions in place that, on a matter of check and balance, even under IRA constitutions, which are riddled with problems in terms of our traditional governance, as opposed to the governance imposed upon us by those instruments, that they allow some check and balance to ensure that the election is free and fair. And again, I see tribes that are looking to maintain integrity of election by hiring companies that do election work and actually process ballots independent of any relative or any politician or any member of the tribe. So yeah, I think we'd be doing a disservice in painting too much of a picture that suggests elections are not free and fair in Indian country, but there are definitely threats that are out there that just need to be minded between elections. And that's important to recognize as we move off of an election at the federal level. You know, now is the time to look at what went right or wrong to make sure that the next election is even better. And I'd say the same thing to Indigenous nations. If you've just finished your election, do not wait to figure out how that process can be made better, more secure, more honest, open, and fair for your people. Because if it's not, it could spell disaster for your entire nation.
And Gabe, for you, when somebody is elected into these positions, what kind of weight does it hold? And this is too for people who are just learning about, you know, our nations. When somebody is elected as the leader, whether it be a governor or a president, what are some of the things that they are being asked to lead?
Well, for those that are unfamiliar with Indian country, yeah, they should consider a tribal chairman or governor or chief, just like they would consider the president of the United States or a governor of a state. And a tribal council could be seen like the United States Congress or a state legislature. They are essentially tasked to lead a nation, a country. And there are significant and enormous, really, ramifications to the leadership of a nation, be it tribal, state, or federal. But they protect the nation from outside attack. They protect homelands and geography. They protect water, air, and environment. They protect the people. They need to generate income to provide services to the people. They need to figure out how to generate taxes, given the very unique land base that is Indian country. They need to figure out how to provide and protect for an entire nation of people in ways that can prove very, very, very challenging, especially when they are closely related to those people. So it's a significant, significant undertaking to ascend to tribal leadership, be it the outright leader of the tribe or the figurehead of the tribe or to a tribal council or other role.
And Gabe, something that made this year's election season different is the pandemic. Is there anything you can share about things tribes were doing to make sure people could vote in safe environments?
Well, historically, meaning in terms of modern history, tribes have required voters to vote in person. Some tribes have absentee balloting programs before this pandemic. Some tribes were doing mail-in elections before this pandemic. But I do think, much like this pandemic caused almost the entire country to go to, in some shape or form, a mail-in system, I think there will be tribes that move to a mail-in system, perhaps exclusively, or to some modified system where people who cannot travel to the reservation or travel home to vote will be allowed to vote from afar. So I think the pandemic has caused that trend or accelerated that trend, and I think it will be long-lasting. I think we will see less tribes require individuals to come to an in-person polling place to cast their votes. I do think that will continue, but I think less tribes will do that, and they will move towards hybrid systems of in-person voting, mail-in voting, absentee balloting, and other ways to ensure that everybody's vote is cast and counted.
And Gabe, any view into just how voter turnout voter turnout for our tribal elections, how it compares to national elections? Any thought or knowledge?
I don't have any firsthand information on that, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, you know, also here too is Henny, who is joining us today out of Pine Ridge, South Dakota, Henny Whalen. And Henny, I want to turn it back to you. You know, Gabe brought up a lot of different things that I'm curious to get your take on, especially how elections were handled, you know, in trying to keep people safe. Is there anything you can share about what your tribe did to make sure that, you know, or to help, you know, not spread COVID?
Well, actually, I also filed a complaint on that because we had a shelter-in-place ordinance. And, you know, we're only supposed to go out and do business, you know, like grocery shopping and go and come back home. You know, they had certain employees that was able to, you know, go out throughout the communities. And so they wanted us, the election commission wanted us to get our signatures. So as a vice president, I had to get 150 signatures. People that ran for council, I think they had to get 30 signatures. So I filed requesting that we abide by the shelter in place ordinance and waive getting the signatures. The election commission's attorney would not do that. And so basically, you know, a lot of people was waiting. A lot of the candidates was waiting to see what the ruling was going to be. So September 8th was the day we were supposed to hand in our packet. And there was a lot of people getting signatures on September 8th, the candidates. And I also took it to the executive board. The executive board never gave me an answer. So 2 weeks after that, our COVID cases rose. And I want to think that us guys getting signatures might have played a part in it, because the virus lives on paper. And if I have 150 people touching my paper, you know, possibly people could have become infected. There was a worker that worked, a poll worker, during training, he caught COVID. And so he took it home to his parents. And, you know, that was devastating. And basically, and this is the same worker. Well, I want to get back to two things that happened. There was a presidential candidate that was one vote behind a person that made it to the general. He asked for a recount, and they denied him. There was another person totally left off the ballot for the presidential candidacy. Okay, so he took it to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court denied it. But basically, the person that was left off the ballot, they had two separate ballots. If you're going to vote for this guy, then you vote on a piece of paper. So where is the secret ballot, you know, in place here? There's none. And in one certain district and in other districts I checked, they didn't offer that ballot. In one district, they received it at 11 o'clock when the polls opened up at 7 o'clock. When we went to vote, we did have social distancing. The people did have protective gear. And some of the workers in the district received their protective gear late. And they should have had it at 7 o'clock in the morning or given it to them the night before so they could show up at the polls with the protective gear on. And I don't think that our people or some of our leaders really understood the magnitude of COVID and how it's transmitted, you know, to
through objects, through breathing. And so basically, you know, our spread of COVID is really bad here right now.
And so I do want to remind folks that we did reach out to the Oglala Sioux Tribal Election commissioners and invited them to be on the program. We did not hear back from them. But I think, you know, maybe this is something that a lot of people have something to comment on, too, of how things went, you know, during a pandemic. And Henny, I'm glad you're with us to share your concerns, too. I got a caller on the line. I want to go ahead and welcome in Tony, who is in Rosebud, South Dakota, tuned in on KOYA. Tony, thanks for reaching out. You're on air.
Okay. People on the road with to listen up. We just had an election, and it was a low turnout for voting. And we're going to be having another one that's coming up for the second half of the communities that were on the reservation. We have 20 communities, and we only voted on 10. I think it should be all together. That way we'll have a new staff working on it, but they only do 10 at a time, and people that were voted in earlier, they were having things running, and then new ones come in, and they can't do anything because the old ones wanted their ideas passed first, and they're kind of fighting over it and talking about the same thing over and over. And they need economic development here on the reservation. There's a lot of bootlegging, there's a lot of drugs, sex trafficking, and that's all going on just because we don't have any economic development here on the Rosebud, and people have to go out to out of state to find jobs.
So it's, and you know, sure. And what happens in our communities, this is how it connects back to who we're putting in leadership and decisions that are made. I really appreciate you reaching out, Tony. And Conrad, we got another caller on the line in Ambler, Alaska, tuned in on KOTZ. Conrad, thanks for reaching out. Got to make it quick.
Thank you for allowing me to have a few words about tribal elections. I live in northwest Alaska, and our tribe has not had any tribal elections for the past 3 years, and they've been giving us excuse after excuse. And we have an active petition drafted up and in action right now, but it's been turned over to the tribal council, but they looked at it and they told us that there were flaws in the petition. But this petition was engineered by legal advice, so they're making excuses and excuses. We have tribal constitution and bylaws, but they are not following that. And we are very upset in this part of Alaska. Thank you.
And thank you for giving us a ring, Conrad. And, you know, as we wrap things up, and maybe you had to listen to the whole hour to just kind of formulate what you wanted to say, or maybe thinking about how things could be reformed in your own community, if you'd like to reach out, you can always find us. comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And Henny Whalen, we really appreciate you being here with us today. And, you know, you've made me think of a lot of things, especially how many nations we have out there and how many stories are out there when it comes to our tribal elections. And of course, wanting to hear from our tribal leaders too about ways to make the whole process better. That's going to wrap it up for our program today. Also, thank you to Mr. Gabe Galanda for also joining us on the line. And when it comes to tribal elections, what more needs to be said? I know we're just wrapping things up. New administrations will be coming in with the new year. And what does that mean? We know transition in our tribal nations might look a little bit different, and we plan to cover that too. So if you have some thoughts on that, or maybe you are working with a transition team and want to share your story with us, you can always reach out to us. NativeAmericaCalling.com is where you find us online. And that's going to wrap it up. Tomorrow we are going to be talking about wolves and wolves being delisted. If you have thoughts on that, we hope you'll sign in tomorrow with us right here on Native America Calling. I'm
Haumitakiapiki. Keep your family and community safe this flu season. Get your flu shot and encourage others to get theirs. Contact your local Indian healthcare provider for more information. Visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.